Welcome to the Kingdom ROI Return on Intention Show. I'm your host, Eric L. Donovan, the Kingdom ROI Strategist. Families and businesses hire me to create, grow, and protect generational wealth by discovering that what they do in their family's living room matters more than what they do in their boardroom or advisor's conference room. On this show, I'm here to tell the stories of families and business owners who recognize that they didn't have a growth problem, they had a relationship and priority problem. We'll hear stories and the journey these families who recognize that business and financial growth weren't what mattered. They know that their relationships and priorities is what's going to determine their outcomes. So stick around to hear the hardships they've faced, the lessons they've learned, and the wisdom they wish they would have known along the way. Each story captures the blessings and the struggles of pursuing return on intention instead of return on investment. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the next 40 minutes where we take the world's broken mindsets and systems and turn them upside down. Hey, welcome to the Return on Intention Show. It's another great day, and I've brought you another special guest. You guys know that my passion is to advocate for families to grow and protect generational abundance for 100+ years. And I do that by exposing widespread planning illusions and minimizing the destruction of wealth that happens typically during your lifetime and beyond. And our guest today has lived a life with an understanding that to truly achieve abundance, it's not about the next business or financial strategy. It's about acknowledging that what we do in our living room matters more than what we do in any conference or boardroom. So I look forward to diving more into the story of their journey. Jamie J, welcome to the Return on Intention Show.
Thank you so much, Eric, for having me. I'm beyond honored to be here. I'm excited to chat with you. You have so much positive energy that it just brings brightness to the day. As you can tell, I'm smiling from ear to ear, and I just appreciate being here. I seriously do. And it's amazing that you're doing this. And thank you so much for sharing this with so many people.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm excited to have you here because I know you've got an incredible story. Before we kind of dive into your story, tell the audience a little bit about who you are. And we'll end up talking about business. I want to know who you are outside of business as well.
Yeah. Well, I am a man that's deeply in love with his wife, my wife, Sarah. She's absolutely amazing. She's got the kindest heart in the world. She's also got the strongest kick in the rear when I need it. And so she's been my consistent rock. Personally, life is really good. We enjoy being outdoors and driving the tractors and building stuff. And that's, you know, we've got a dog, Kita, and two cats, Tater and Tommy. And we just love the Ozarks here in Southwest Missouri. We just, it's a beautiful life.
You guys have two daughters too, right?
Yeah, it's so crazy. So we have daughters from previous marriages, yep. but both our daughters' names is Jessica.
I love that.
So we have to say you're Jessica or my Jessica.
Yeah. Great minds think alike when it comes to naming your kids.
Huh? Yeah, right. How about you?
Oh, yeah, I've got three kids. It's not, but yeah, I got a 20-year-old Clayton. Don't get me on the spot here. 19-year-old Austin, and then a 17-year-old Grayson. So,
oh my gosh, yeah,
we're kind of entering that empty nest. We're thinking, seeing it coming, and it's dreadful and exciting all at the same time. So,
yeah, it's pretty crazy because I had to tell Sarah that she's a grandma.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, right. You look in the mirror every day and you're like, hey, this guy's not old enough to be a grandpa.
Yeah, wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And Jamie, you've got a pretty incredible story. I can kind of ask you some specific questions, but I think that, you know, I would love to kind of hear how you went from homeless to kind of where you are today, and what you kind of went through and what you learned along the way. And I'm going to let you tell that story. And if there may be some other questions I want to ask, but I am more curious about that than anything.
Yeah, thank you. It took me a long time to even share with people that I was homeless. It happened twice as a kid. My dad was quite the entrepreneur or quite the, he liked to kind of be, he was a very risky business person.
Okay.
And we lost our home the first time. I remember going to school and having to wear the same clothes every day. And the kids were making fun of us and, oh man, it was brutal. And then we ended up losing that apartment. And so we had a 1979 brown Suburban, Chevy Suburban, where it was my little brother, me, my mom, and my dad at the time, the guy that adopted me, not my real dad, and two poodles. and our luggage, everything that we owned was in the back. We had the moving truck move us from Colorado to California, and my dad wasn't able to pay for the $3,000 for the moving truck. So they ended up auctioning off all of our stuff. And one thing I would recommend to someone is never go to an auction of your own stuff. It's devastating. My little brother's whole Star Wars collection was auctioned off and nobody even knew what they got there. But you look at that, what that's worth today, it's crazy. We went and saw a Star Wars display somewhere, my little brother and I, and my brother had more in the collection than the Star Wars display.
It was, is that right? Yeah.
And so anyways, long story longer, you know, imagine being, you know, preteen, you know, kind of nowhere to go. I got a job at McDonald's for the first time. And I remember my mom and brother would come through and my brother would order a 20 chicken McNugget and I'd stack like 40 of them in there. I used to remember the exact number, but I could get so many in there. And then at the end of the day, they throw out all the burgers. Well, I'd go and get all the burgers that they threw out because they just threw them into a burger bin. So I'd go get them all. I'd give them to a bunch of the homeless people, but I'd also bring it home. And I would save up enough money to where 3 days of the week, we didn't have to stay in the Suburban. We stayed in a hotel called the Pitcairn Motel, P-I-T-C-A-I-R-N. I'll never forget it because it was right on Harbor Boulevard, close to Disneyland. There was drugs and prostitution and things like that. So it was not the best of places to be. But we got a warm shower and we had a bed to sleep in instead of staying in the Suburban. So that was my first, but I've been homeless 3 times in my life. So, then the next time was my first day out of the Army. Did you ever hear about that story about me?
No. Being out of
the Army? So I went the first day out of the Army. I went from, I came from Mannheim, Germany, flew me into Fort Dix, New Jersey. I outcrossed in Fort Knox, New Jersey. They dropped me off at the front gates and they said, okay, thank you for your service. And I was like, oh, okay, now what? So my friend Chris Cunha and I, who happened to be getting out that same day, we took a plane back to California, where we were both going. And then we separated, went our different ways. And I went and met my wife and I was so happy to be back. And she took me to lunch and said, I'm sorry, we're getting a divorce. And I said, whoa, wait, what?
Yeah.
And she says, well, you know, you can't stay with me and the family and you're not going to get a job with my dad. I said, oh, there goes all my plans. So I was with my rucksack and duffel bag walking down the 91 freeway. And it's funny, kind of ironic, but I came to another McDonald's on the side of the road. And it was so demeaning. I was begging people to give me a dollar so I could get a burger. And I hadn't eaten for probably 2 days at this point, so I was pretty hungry. And drink water like out of faucets and stuff, but it was really surreal, very demeaning, very like I had zero control over what was going on. It was very frustrating, and so finally got a couple bucks, went in and got a double cheeseburger. I remember at the time, and I remember taking that bite and I took a bite and I wrapped it back up and I was so hungry, but I was like, I don't know where I'm going to get my next meal, you know? So an hour later I took another bite and I remember just slowly chewing and like, and it was crazy. And then I finally connected with one of my old buddies and said, hey, you can come crash on my couch in Huntington Beach, California, lived there for the next couple of years and stuff. I got back on my feet, got a job as a waiter and all that stuff. And what's funny is one of my friends, Eric, put $60 in my rucksack because he offered me money and I was too proud to take the money. Oh, and the whole time I'm sitting there begging, I had $60 in my ruck. So
really, really.
Yeah. And then the third time I was homeless was because of a failed business venture in 2009. We all know what happened in 2008. Yep. I happened to be part of a real estate ad agency that went under. We lost 72 clients in 3 months. I lost my apartment. And it wasn't necessarily that I was homeless. I wasn't necessarily homeless the third time, but pretty close. I had to move back with my parents. That was tough. So yeah, being homeless has taught me a lot of humility. And I think it's really motivated me and given me a drive, that's kind of taken me to where I am today. And I just never want to be there again. And I don't want to take light of anybody else's challenges in their lives, because maybe they weren't homeless, but something in their life impacted them the way that homelessness impacted me.
Sure.
And we've all been there and done that. And I've found a way to harness that energy from such a challenging, demeaning point in my life to where I don't want my daughter to ever experience that, let alone my grandchildren. And I want to work my hindquarters off to provide an opportunity that they always have some form of a safety net down the road in the future. And thank God I was homeless. Otherwise the perspective would be completely shifted, and who knows what that would look like.
Let me ask you a question about that, though, because one of the things that I find to be true in a lot of situations, and people who are in circumstances, and a lot of times we look in the comment is they should do better, they should do different, you know, whatever. But when I've really gotten down to it, what I really believe has happened is that you run into people who lose hope. They lose a possibility that things could be better. And then that's what starts the downward spiral. Hope is gone. And now, so what do you think was unique about you or your situation, or who poured into you that gave you a spark of hope? Because it could have gone the other way.
Yeah. It 100% would have to be my mom. Mm-hmm. Even though I wasn't close to her proximity wise, I was very close to her relationship wise. I knew her my whole life, right? And you know, so she was always my biggest fan, and no matter whether I had a penny to my name or $1 million to my name, she would be the same person. She was always there for me to pick me up. And so this is back in the time, there's no cell phones. Right. If I'm going to make a call, I got to go to a payphone and make a collect call. And she was never well to do by any means, but she would always accept a collect call for me. And just knowing that she was there was comforting. That was probably that North Star that I always wanted my mom to know that I was going to do well. And it broke my heart to have failed like that. And it feels so like she's no longer with us. She passed March 1st of 2020. But I remember us giving her, I played hockey for a long time, 46 years. She was always the biggest fan, you know, and she loved Patrick Marleau and the San Jose Sharks. And we got her a Patrick Marleau jersey with a signature, and we still have it on video to this day. And she was so happy. And those little things right there, those precious moments are, oh man, I did anything for just that moment. And when I was homeless, there's no way I could have done anything like that. But I didn't know at the time. She just wanted me to be safe. She just wanted the best for me. So that she was probably my motivator. A lot of false motivators throughout the times.
Yeah.
And now it's my daughter, and now it's my wife, and it's my grandchildren, and it's keeping that love and happiness alive. And I don't mean to sound cheesy or go down that track, but it's a big deal. That's an important question to ask, I think. And you hit it right on the head there. I'm thinking it's my mom.
So you talked about Sarah a couple times here. I'm gonna dig in a little bit more. When it comes down to kind of your marriage and the relationship that you guys have, what are you most proud of that you guys have been able to do together?
That she said yes.
She said yes every day.
Yeah. No, I would say, you know what? So we're in a phase of our life right now. We were so fortunate enough to get a little land, and we are having so much fun developing. And I was on the dozer this past weekend, building side by side trails, and we together we're building a cabin with our own two hands, thanks to YouTube University. We did have two people help us on two different occasions. I got a little hurt when I fell off the ladder, so someone else helped on the roof, and then we had another person help with one of the footers. But other than that, we've done everything ourselves. The deck, and we mill the wood. We harvest the wood right from our land, put it through the sawmill. And just, we've learned so much and working together. We've definitely been at each other's throats a couple times, but I would say 95% of the time it's just pure elation and thanks and support. And mind you, this is a 400 square foot cabin that we built, and we're building more down the road, but that's not very big for two people to stay in and work together all day. Right. So that whole experience has been fascinating. So together, you know, that's the phase of our life we're in right now, when we just enjoy creating. So,
So along the way, I'm going to imagine it hasn't been all roses and happiness. Where do you feel like you've made your biggest mistake, and what did you learn in your marriage? Where do you feel like you've made the biggest mistake in your marriage, but you've learned and it's brought you to where you are today?
Oh, that's easy. Biggest mistake in my marriage is not managing my money correctly. I've never been good at that. And so that's brought some challenges easily. That's probably where it is. I think other than that, though, golly, man, she's absolutely amazing. I don't know. In the 12, 13 years we've been together, we may have had four or five fights in that time.
Wow. So, but you said that's where you've had the biggest, what is that, if not being as good at managing your money through that and maybe getting her support and her help, what has that taught you through that season?
Okay. Remember how I talked about not wanting to disappoint my mom? I don't want to disappoint her. It's not about the material things. It's about being able to have the freedom to make a decision to do something, and not giving her that freedom it's disappointing for me sometimes. Like the thoughts will come in like, oh, I failed. You know, I didn't do enough on my end. And I think that's probably the biggest thing is letting her down. I don't want to let her down. And it's simply freedom. And that is a choice to do what she wants to do when she wants to do it.
I'm going to ask you what I think is maybe a hard question, and I don't know if you've considered it or not. So I'm warning you that before I ask you the question. You said that, I'm going to maybe put a little bit of words in your mouth, but I think you kind of made the comment, like there was a blessing in being homeless. Like there was you learned that there was a benefit to that. On the other side of the coin, you made the comment that you never want your daughter to experience that. So knowing that it was that situation that turned you into who you are today and created you to be who you are today, how do you balance the fact that sometimes we have to let our kids struggle? Sometimes we have to let them go through hard things, because if we make everything easier, they don't get the you are who you are because of what you went through, right? And so how do you balance the not wanting your daughter to experience similar, and I'm not, maybe not homelessness, right? Hard things versus letting her experience the hard things so she learns her own lessons.
Yeah, that's the golden question. So I also mentioned that other people have gone through challenges, maybe not homelessness, but they've gone through challenges that they feel has been an ultimate test, right? Like they can equate that to my homelessness.
Yeah.
Where I might say like, no way. Like that's homelessness way worse than that. But to them, that could be as challenging. And so there are some things. There was a time where we weren't talking. That was a huge challenge. Hmm. And thank God we're talking again and rebuilding that bond. But I think it's important for parents to, I don't believe in helicopter parents. I will do anything. I will break through any wall, as I'm sure you would for your kids. No matter, I would easily take a bullet for my daughter, for Sarah's daughter, for Sarah, for my grand, easily. No questions. Zero. But there has to come a point in time where they have to figure out who they are. Mm-hmm. And as much as I want to reach in and assist and support them and give them guidance, I know I kind of got to reel that back because they have to discover what their journey is. And there's a fine line there, and it depends on where you decide to go over that line and where you don't. Kids never came with an instruction booklet, right? there's people that have opinions on how things work, but I think it's the dynamic. And if you look at every single successful person in the world, and when I say successful, it's whatever success means to them. They feel good about what they've done or what they've accomplished, and they feel like they're in a good place. That's my definition of success. But if you look at, I wouldn't say everyone, but pretty much everyone, the family unit is intact. Hmm. People that are really well known, they will fight over tooth and nail to have that last name.
Yeah.
They will, you know, and it's a form of status, I guess, and among other things, wealth or whatever. But I think the more you see the family unit broken, the less generational wealth means anything or is even there. Yep. When you look at people like, you know, people that aren't, that don't have anything, that came up from nothing, is if you had family, you're okay. Mm. If you don't have that family unit, I don't think you're okay. And at the same time, there's the family unit that, hey, life is not easy. I know you didn't ask to come into this world, but you're here.
Yep.
You have responsibilities. You have to rely on that. Well, can I please borrow some money? Cause I have to, you know what, at this time, no. How can you say that? Well, you know what? I don't have it. But I know you. No, I don't have it this time. Well, what did they learn from that? They learn that they're going to figure things out. And do they? Yeah. Because human beings are freaking resilient as all get out.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was a great question. That was a great question.
Jamie, before we're gonna run out of time before we know it here, but I do want to get a chance because you're talking about the importance of the family unit, but I think there's something pretty special you and Sarah are putting together on your property there. Give everyone kind of a vision of what's coming and what you guys are pulling together and maybe even how people can follow on as you get that built.
Yeah, Eric, thank you so much. Yeah, this is the exciting part. So we are working at building a leadership academy. And we're calling it Lost a Lot Leadership Academy because Sarah and I, every time we travel, we get lost a lot. But what we found is even though we take a right instead of a left, you know, we found ways of enjoying that and seeing the new things that we've learned from, you know, the misdirection, if you will. So we're building Lost a Lot Leadership Academy where people will come out, do a digital detox, experience the beautiful Ozarks, the bunch of trails. We'll do team exercises, land navigation, and teach them how to start a fire. We're going to bring speakers in. We'll do it 6 times a year, 4 days, 3 nights. This is not 5-star. This is not 1-star. Like this, you're coming out and you may not have a shower for 3 days. Like it's crazy. It just depends on your, how, if you can handle cold water or not, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, and it's a definite challenge, but we'll bring speakers in. They'll do different, maybe it'll be marketing, maybe it'll be wealth planning, maybe it'll be whatever, and that will be the theme. But everybody gets a handbook and a pencil or pen. There's no computers. Obviously, bring your phones, but we'll do fun stuff like depending on the type of season. Maybe we do mushroom hunting, and then we'll you know, roasted garlic butter and fry up the morel mushrooms and just do fun things like that. But it's all kind of an opportunity for people to kind of step away from the chaos of everyday life and just have fun for 4 days and 3 nights. And we'll provide the cabin where you stay. You'll stay in the cabin that we built and we'll give you, depending on the type of season, all the clothes that you're going to need. We can't wait.
When are you guys expecting to be open?
That is going to launch the spring of 25, but in the early part of 24, as of the time of this recording, the end of January, beginning of February, we're going to launch the online academy where we're going to start building up some resources so people can learn all about different things. We're going to do like office hours, and like I could have you on there and you're talking about building wealth and how you can do generational wealth building, everything that that business leaders need to know. And then there's a sense of community, and we'll go into the problems and the challenges that we face together every day.
I love that. I love that. So if people want to follow up, kind of keep up with what you're going on, where do they access that information?
They can go right to our website, bottleneck.online for now. This is going to be a different entity than Bottleneck, but that's where we're going to kind of launch it from, because that's where we know everybody.
Okay. Bottleneck.online.
Yes.
Okay. And we'll make sure we put that in the speaker notes as well. Jimmy, I got one last question for you. Well, maybe two. We'll see where we are. But in 100 years, what do you hope your family remembers about you?
That I was a good person. And gosh, in 100 years from now, you know, what? I hope we still have the land. And I hope that I hope that my great great grandkids are enjoying the land that we helped put together.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. Is there anything you didn't get to share that you wanted to share before we get a chance to sign off today?
No, I thank you for the incredible dialogue. I really appreciate it, Eric. Ever since we met for the first time, you have an incredible gift for not interviewing, but creating discussion. I don't believe in interviewing. I believe in having a great dialogue, and you make me feel so comfortable from the first day that we got together. I know the people that were on that call that same day felt exactly the same. So you have an amazing gift, Eric. And thank you so much for sharing that with me and your listeners. It's amazing. You don't come across Eric Dunovitz every day.
Well, thank you for that. I will receive that. And I appreciate you, Jamie, just for being authentic and being real. I mean, your story is just so encouraging. And I thank you for not holding back. So it's been great having you on the show. Everyone, thank you so much. Thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure every chance we get to just sit down with you. As you know, I run an invitation-only program that helps families grow and protect generational abundance for 100-plus years. And we do that by exposing widespread planning illusions and minimizing the destruction of wealth that happens during your lifetime and then even beyond. So I've got several tips and examples that can help you grow your wealth by discovering that you don't need another business or financial strategy. What you need to do is acknowledge that what you do in your living room matters more than what you do in any conference or boardroom. So please reach out, connect with us at kingdomroi.org for more information. Jamie, thank you so much for being here, and we will be with you again next time. God bless you. Have a great day. Thank you so much for joining me for the Kingdom ROI Return on Intention podcast. If you're a business owner or a family who recognizes that what you're doing in your family's living room matters more than what you do in the boardroom or advisors' conference rooms, you're open to sharing the ups and downs of the journey and would like to be a guest on the show, then I'd like to invite you to apply by visiting our website, www.kingdomroi.org. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and they mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Go to our website, www.kingdomroi.org, or follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Thanks for listening. This is Eric L. Dunovitz, the Kingdom ROI Strategist, signing off. Until next time.